Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dude's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
We're twisting it up a little bit today.
That's right. Normally, you decide what our topic's going to be based on your extensive knowledge of the law.
Yeah, it's based on some suggestions sometimes from our listeners. And also, maybe you throw out a few different things too. But usually, I'm the one that kind of narrows it down and picks one.
Yeah, because you got to do the research and actually know something.
Yeah.
I don't actually have to know anything. I just come in here and be my idiot self, and, you know, that's all I have to offer.
You just yuck it up, funny man.
That's
right. Make your jokes. Laugh. Make me laugh.
Say something funny. I hate it when people say it. Say something funny.
Tell me a joke.
Yeah. I used to know lots of them, but I found in my older age they don't stick.
I remember some of your jokes. It's probably a good idea.
I had to dig hard to pull the monkey with the cork, pull that one out. I've been using the tagline for a long time, but I hadn't really told the joke for a long time, so I had to think about it for a
wrecked him. Damn near killed him.
That's right. But anyway, this week I came up with the topic, and it was based on an article that I read. Now,
all right.
I have not shared with Michael what this article is, so it's going to be catching him kind of cold, but I just want to preface it by saying, I know I'm going to start getting funny looks before I even start from across the microphone over there, since he's the filter and I'm not, but I don't agree with anything that this guy was doing. I find it morally reprehensible, but this is a podcast about the law. So my thought was, as repugnant as this guy may be and what he was involved in may be, was he really doing something illegal? So,
you have piqued my interest.
The story comes from Fort Mitchell, Kentucky.
Beautiful, beautiful area.
Beautiful area. A Kentucky judge has dropped a child pornography charge against a man who ordered sex dolls resembling an infant and a 6 to 8 year old girl.
Okay, now I will say I did see this headline, but I did not go any farther.
That was as far as you made it.
I was like, that's about all I need to know about that.
This judge dismissed the charge of having an item portraying a sexual performance by a minor, saying there was no actual child involved. So in other words, they dragged this guy into court and charged him with being a pedophile and committing these acts by simply owning these dolls. And the judge says, well, there's no children being harmed. How can we charge him with that? So they said, Commonwealth attorney has said that he is probably going to appeal the case, that he still thinks that there's a case there. And they said they were citing court records, reports police tracked a package from China. So evidently China is the one that makes these fine things. And they tracked the package from China to this 41-year-old guy's house, where they served a search warrant and found the anatomically correct female dolls. He was also charged with a small amount of marijuana possession that they found while they were searching.
Okay.
But federal, now this is where it gets, you know, you'd think, has anybody given this any thought, you know? And my answer would be no. Have you heard anything about legislating robot dolls?
I have not, no.
I hadn't either. But there is a federal legislation that is being debated. It's not been moved anywhere, but it's being debated, and it's called Curbing Realistic Exploitative Electronic Pedophile Robots Act. And it would ban child sex dolls and is being considered. Now, you're one of those guys with all those government acronyms. Did you catch what the acronym is there?
I did not. I wasn't looking for one.
Curbing Realistic Exploitative Electronic
Creep
Pedophilic Robot Act. So that's what it is. Creep Robots Act.
Creep Ro. Creepro Raggy.
So they are contemplating that. Now, you know, I have, you know me, my mind...
That's true. I do know you.
My mind has lots of questions about all of this.
Yeah.
Now, certainly, you know, infant or 5 or 6 year old doll or whatever, yes, that's just awful, you know, and no doubt about it, no question about it. I don't want anybody to think I'm saying this is okay.
Right.
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying, is this really illegal?
Is it illegal or just frowned upon?
It's more than frowned upon. but here's what I say. If we go into this act, you've got a bunch of government people. We want to think about our congressmen, our senators on the House floor debating having sex with robot dolls and what's okay and what's not okay and this position and that orifice or whatever is okay or not. I mean, is this what we want from our elected people to decide this?
I think so.
Oh, man.
I think when it comes down to that, to pedophilia and things like that and possible exploitation of children, I think we probably need that.
Well, now here's my other question. There better not be any teenage robot sex dolls in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how are you going to tell? Now, look, this looks like a 14-year-old sex doll. Well, no, she's just not very well-developed 18-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you get into that? So my thought is all these robot dolls that are going to be legal are going to have to be like middle-aged MILFs. That's all you can go for. Because anything younger, somebody might think it's a minor.
Yeah. Well, as far as which ones are appropriate, it's like the old thing. I don't know, but I'll know it when I see it.
Back to the pornography, huh?
Yeah. So I think that's probably the barometer. You know, I
America, the home of the middle-aged MILF sex doll.
Yeah.
It's the only way to be safe.
So I don't know. As far as like the legality of it, I see kind of a natural connection there, and I think I don't have a problem with some sort of legislature passing some sort of law that prohibits people from possessing things like that. I really don't.
But as far as current law right now, as far as you know, there isn't any law that prohibits you from. I mean, what if it was a pumpkin instead of a sex doll?
Yeah.
We don't want people going around having sex with pumpkins, but what if you were? Is there a law against pumpkin sex?
Probably.
Where?
Especially this time of year.
I don't think so. I think that's why some of those mouths are not jaggedy. They're round O's.
Pumpkin lattes joke there somewhere. I don't know. So anyway.
Pumpkin sodomy.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I don't know. And this maybe goes towards,
who knows?
We can look towards intent a little bit.
Well, that's what got me thinking of intent.
Yeah.
Because what was the intent here? Well, we know what his intent was. However, his
intent was to have sex with something that looks like a young child.
Right.
So based on that, I have no problem convicting that guy of some sort of crime. Because here's the bottom line. If he is ordering something like that,
he's got a problem.
He needs to be on some sort of registry.
He's a sicko. I think he already was. He was already on some type of registry. But he also, I mean, people like that don't ever get cured. I mean, they're always going to have those urges.
I'm not a scientist. I don't know, but that is what I've heard.
Yes. That's everything that I've read. That doesn't go away. So you've got to lock those people up, or maybe these surrogates take the place of having to have real people. So maybe they solve a problem. I don't know.
No, I disagree with that 100%.
Well, all I'm saying is right now, as far as I know, there's nothing illegal about it. It's very creepy and morally repugnant, but it's not illegal.
I think it should be, though.
Well, okay.
And that's my opinion. That's my 2 cents into it.
Then you need to get hold of your representatives and tell them to debate this bill on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah. I think they have probably more pressing things to do, but...
Heck no!
I don't know.
Straighten out the robots first, because when they come and they take over, which they are going to, these guys are going to be representative of what we did to their young.
I don't technically think that a robot looks like they're young is actually they're young. But you never know. I don't know. I don't know what their robot minds might think.
That's where we're going to get those ones that are, what are they, humanoids? Yeah. That are part robot and part human? That's what's going to happen.
Well, so are we going to talk about intent?
Yes.
Okay. Because that was the topic that was sold to me.
That is what we're talking about, intent. That was what made me think of intent.
So intent is kind of a broad subject that spans a lot of different legal theories. It does criminal, does civil, and actually, as we were talking about before the show, which I hadn't really thought about, does constitutional as well. And it's in criminal law is probably where you come across it, I would say, the most, with civil law being, being second, because that's the other, only other kind of law, really, so I guess it'd have to be second. But, and basically, intent can be described as a decision to bring about a prohibited consequence in the context of criminal law. And basically, a person intends a consequence when, number one, they foresee that it will happen if their given series of acts or omissions continue, and number two, they desire it to happen. And these are basically, intent is one of those things that's like an element of a crime. So we talk about different legal things, we always talk about elements. So, for example, at common law, burglary was defined as the entering of a dwelling at nighttime with the intent to commit a felony within, or attempt to commit a crime there within, or something like that. So those were the different elements. It had to be somebody's dwelling, it had to be nighttime, it had to be some sort of intent to commit a crime in there. So those are all different elements of different things. So when you look at intent, intent makes up the element of a lot of different crimes. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So,
gotcha.
Got me? There's a fancy legal word, scienter, or scienter. It's like...
scienter?
Yeah, S-C-I-E-N-T-E-R.
Hmm.
And that's kind of a breakdown of a legal, or of a Latin word. And that actually means intent, pretty much. So if you want to sound smart and want to pronounce it right, you say, see enter.
I say see enter. I seen him enter the dwelling at night. He's a burglar.
So now if we're looking at your example of the robots and what's going on there, and that's why I kind of don't have a problem with that, because I see that person's intent, at least maybe not in the books now, but having a law that does this, I see no problem with somebody who has the intent of wanting to have sex with a child defining a crime there, as long as they're following through with it on some sort of physical manifestation of it by ordering a sex doll like that. So I think that's actually probably the proper elements of a crime in my mind, because you have the intent is they want to have sex with a child or something that looks like a child, and they're following through with it by ordering a doll like that. So I think that's kind of one of those things. I'm pretty much a libertarian when it comes to a lot of kind of things like that. You know, I'm not trying to prohibit people from owning certain things or whatnot, but I think that's the category of things where we need to go ahead and probably draw a line about that. So if they have the intent to want to have sex with a child like that, and they want to order some sort of doll where they can manifest that out is a polite word for...
yeah.
Then I think that should be a crime, and I don't have a problem with it. It's the same thing. If you possess any kind of child pornography, you don't have to be the one who produced or anything like that. If you simply possess it, it is a crime in and of itself. So
that's true, but those are actual people. So there are actual people being harmed.
Well, what happens if you have drawings or animations of child pornography?
I don't know that those are considered child pornography.
They might be. I bet.
I was going to say, what if you draw a child's face on your pumpkin and then have sex with it?
What is up with the pumpkin talk?
You didn't see Saturday Night Live, huh?
No, I didn't.
Well, Saturday Night Live had a whole thing on that. So.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
What was it?
That's what made me think of it. They were having to fire some guys that worked at the pumpkin place where they were selling pumpkins because they had caught them on film the night before having sex with the pumpkins.
Ah, I see where you're going with this. But yeah, so, and that's where I can kind of see, like, in that example, why you can look at the intent of the person, and that would be something to be kind of pretty telling in my mind. So
that's telling you that he intends to commit an act.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that it isn't the act. So now you just exonerated him.
What's that?
You just said that shows that he intends to commit an act.
Right.
But that in and of itself is not the act. So that means that you just exonerated him because he didn't commit an act.
It doesn't matter.
He was just contemplating it.
It doesn't matter. Conspiracy charge.
He was practicing.
A conspiracy charge is basically contemplating an act and taking a step in furtherance of it. So by him contemplating it and then taking a step in furtherance of it by ordering this, then I think that's enough for me.
Well, maybe that's where the prosecutor dropped the ball. Instead of charging him with committing lewd acts, he should have charged him with conspiracy to commit lewd acts.
Maybe, yeah. But again, I don't know if this fits the definition or not. I think it probably doesn't. I think this is probably a case of first impression, so as we'd say in the legal biz. But there's got to be something that could be done.
Whether it's legal or not, he's one sick bastard, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with whatever you want to charge him with, go ahead and charge him with.
Yeah. We don't care if we lose one there or not.
Now, when we talk about intent, generally we talk about more serious crimes because a person who plans and executes some sort of crime is considered more serious danger to the public than someone who acts kind of spontaneously, like a crime of opportunity, mm-hmm. kind of like finding a bike unlocked or something like that. Somebody who really plans it out methodically and decides they're going to go through with something, mm-hmm. we consider them to be a bit more dangerous. And again, the intent, as we've kind of talked about, and you've obviously brought this up a little bit, is kind of a subjective test. There's not really exactly. kind of an exact science to it. But the way you kind of look at it is, are people aware of the probable and possible consequences of their act? So,
yeah, you know, and intent comes strictly down to the mental aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because, like the example that I read, it cannot ever be based on a muscular action that takes place. Like, you can throw a punch, and throwing a punch will never be the cause for the crime. It was the intent behind that punch. So it's not the muscular action, it's the thought process as to before you threw the punch.
Yeah. It's all basically, you know, a subjective type thing about what's going on in your brain whenever you're doing it. Not necessarily what you're actually physically doing.
Yeah, intent is found to be made up of foresight of the harm as a consequence, coupled with a desire to bring it about.
Sounds good.
How about that?
That sounds good. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting, too, is we've talked about felony murder before. Mm-hmm. Felony murder is a law which basically means that if someone dies during the commission of a felony, then you could be found guilty of felony murder, assuming you're one of the felons committing the felon.
Right.
And the interesting
even
thing,
if he was your partner.
Yeah.
Even and if he gets shot by the police.
Exactly.
You can be charged with his murder.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those kind of interesting kind of laws. And originally, some states didn't require any kind of intent whatsoever with those things. Basically because saying, well, if you were committing a felony, then you should have known that it's a serious crime. So somebody could have died. It was foreseeable somebody could have died while doing this.
Kind of like strict liability, huh?
Pretty much, yeah. Now, most states have moved away from that, where they still actually require some sort of intent for a felony murder as well, above and beyond just committing a felony, just flatly committing a felony and somebody dying. So there has to be some sort of more serious type thing in there, like someone bringing a gun into the situation or something along those lines.
Well, I was going to say, short of committing your crime without a weapon, anytime you introduce a weapon into it right there, then that has a possibility.
Well, what about this? What if you... we have a charge in West Virginia called uttering, and basically mm-hmm. that means where you...
It means you don't speak up. It's like mumbling.
Yeah, where basically you forge a document. You forge a document.
Right.
So say you forged a prescription, because you have a pain pill addiction. You forge a prescription, mm-hmm. and you take it to a pharmacy. You actually got a prescription for 30, but you put an extra zero on there.
You got 300.
But made 300, and you hand it to the pharmacist. And as you're handing it to the pharmacist gets a paper cut, they're a hemophiliac, they bleed to death and die. Now, do you think that person is guilty of felony murder? I mean, they're possibly committing a felony while doing it, and the person died during the commission of the felony. So, see, that would be under a strict reading of a felony murder with no intent.
I would have to say no.
Yeah.
As a series of circumstances.
Right, but as a strict reading of felony murder with no intent, that would fall right underneath it. So,
but if he got the 300 pills and he took them home and he left them laying there open on his bedstand and his kid came in and took all the pills and died, then I'd say yes.
Well, that wouldn't be the uttering. That would be more like child neglect or something along those lines. But
well,
yeah,
he still committed a felony in obtaining the pills.
That's true, but you're kind of taking it off in a different direction.
I've been known to do that. Zag on them.
Yeah, you definitely zagged on that one. So, but yeah, I think that's kind of a good demarcation of why felony murder needs to have some sort of intent. Just because you're committing a felony doesn't necessarily mean you should be guilty of murder if someone dies during the commission of it, if it's something that's really completely unforeseeable that somebody might die during it like that.
Well, that's what confused me in the example that you gave, I don't know, a couple of episodes ago. that horrific crime that those people committed when they kidnapped that those two and killed them.
Yeah.
And then they turned on each other, you know, and all that kind of stuff about who was doing it. None of them were getting convicted of murder, and there were people being let off, and they all should have been found guilty of murder if they were involved in it, because there were people that died during the commission of it.
Well, but not all states have felony murder.
Oh, they don't?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that might explain it then.
Yeah, I mean,
I wondered about that at the time.
Yeah. And if they do, if all states do have felony murder, they might have different elements. So felony murder as it exists, say, in West Virginia is completely different than it exists in, say, California or wherever. So
yeah, it doesn't seem like they employ that very often, or at least I don't hear about it, or maybe there aren't many instances of it. Well,
it's the catch-all.
Yeah.
I mean, because really, you want to have some other kind of criminal act going on there. If somebody kills somebody, you want to charge them with murder, secondary murder, manslaughter, something along those lines. You don't want to rely on the felony murder, because, you know, it's just, I think it's easier to sell to a jury, you know, that somebody intended to kill them. Mm-hmm. That you paint them as a cold-blooded killer, as opposed to just some hapless
they
felon.
They were along for the ride.
Yeah, who happened, somebody died, so.
Yeah.
When you're looking at intent, though, in different crimes, you have different kinds. You have what's called, like, basic intent, where you have intentional or reckless commission of an act. For example, like battery, when you were talking about it. So it only requires like a basic intent that the actor knew or should have known that his action would lead to harmful contact with the victim. So that's like a basic type intent. And then you have a whole different category of crimes which require what's called specific intent. Generally, the specific intent has to be unlawfully and maliciously intent to cause grievous bodily harm or possibly resist arrest or something along those lines. So when you have these various specific intent crimes, they require like an extra element. It's a bit tougher to prove. The interesting thing, like I said about conspiracy, is basically you have to show almost like a specific intent type. That's like a specific intent type crime. You have to show the person specifically intended to commit that crime. Mm-hmm. So I think I talked about this case before. It was kind of interesting. I had a jury trial, and it turned on, at least in my mind, it turned on this, and this is what I argued to the jury, so I hope this is what they made their decision based on. I had a client who had a prescription for a certain kind of medication, mm-hmm. and they had it on their person during a set-up drug buy that was supposed to take place. Now, my client did not make the phone call to arrange the drug deal or anything like that. But my client did have the drug that was requested to be sold on them, as well as some other people had that drug on them too. But my client had a valid prescription for it, and the ones they had were in their pocket. And additionally, my client, it was his birthday, and he had been drinking heavily, and he was pretty much in and out of consciousness during the whole time riding around in the car during this. Mm-hmm. And so my whole argument to the jury was that, and I stipulated beforehand with the prosecutor that he did have a valid prescription, and the prescription he had on him was his. And so what I argued to the jury was, is like he didn't have the intent to try to do this. He basically was just in a car where these other people were selling drugs, and he was basically unconscious because he had been, you know, partying up for his birthday.
It was birthday. That's why everybody from either West Virginia or Florida are on their birthday.
Yeah, exactly. He's getting turnt.
I know that's the two places you practice. So I figured it was one of those two. I didn't know which one.
It was West Virginia.
Okay.
But anyway, the jury came back, and I think they must have agreed with me in some part, or maybe they felt sorry for me. I don't know. But he was found not guilty of that. So, you know, they didn't think he didn't conspire to do it, because there really was, well, number one, too, there was no act in furtherance on his part. He just basically was there with the drugs on him. But
there was no mens rea.
Exactly. And I actually argued that to the jury. Mm-hmm. I kind of went through this whole explanation about what mens rea was and why there was no specific intent on behalf of my client and this, that, and the other. So,
it was his birthday. He was drunk. And they went, well, of course.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, so that's specific intent crimes are kind of interesting. There's a slight list I made of them here. The first one would be kind of like assault. Assault is defined as an act in which no person shall knowingly cause or attempt to cause physical harm to another. So basically, if John punches a guy at a bar because the guy won't give John his seat back, John will likely be charged with assault because he specifically intended to cause physical harm to the other guy by punching him. So it's specifically intending to cause that harm to him. Attempt is another one, which is a specific intent crime. And a lot of times you hear attempt described with other types of felonies, like an attempt to commit a felony or attempt to
murder,
things like that. And you have to have an act done with the specific intent to commit the crime that falls just short of completing it. So basically, you have to have something where it shows the person really intended this to happen, but something happened and they couldn't follow through with it for whatever reason.
Well, now that's one that I have a problem with.
Attempt?
Yeah, because if it's murder or attempted murder, it should have the same penalties. And or there should be no attempted murder. It should just be murder. Because you shoot some poor son of a bitch 15 times and by the grace of God he lives, you didn't have nothing to do with that. You tried to kill him. And just because he lived doesn't mean you're any more innocent than if he died. You should get the same crime. Just because a poor son of a bitch lived, you don't get as bad of a penalty. That's just not right. If you tried to take somebody's life, consider them dead.
Well, but I don't know. I'm pretty happy with where our jurisprudence is on it. I don't need to change that.
I do. I do. I think they should be charged the same thing. I just don't think that's right. Your intent was to kill them. There's intent for you. Your intent was to kill them. You gunned them down in the street, but the guy lived.
He didn't gun
you
him
should
down.
Pay the price.
They got back up.
Well, he got back up, but he wasn't the same. You just because you made him full of holes doesn't mean you can make him whole.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a problem with it like that because I think the if you're looking at an eye for eye type thing and the way our legal system's set up, if somebody doesn't die, then it's not quite as bad. So,
well, from your standpoint, from the perpetrator standpoint, it was the same thing. There's no difference. It's just the guy lived, but your intent was to kill him. Cold, plain and simple. So you should suffer the consequence of murder. That's my stance on it. I'm Tommy Smurl. Vote for me. I approve this message.
that's your platform right there?
That's my platform.
Okay.
That and the creep robots.
Another specific intent crime is burglary law. As I said, a common law burglary is defined as the breaking and entering into the place of another at nighttime with the intent to commit a felony within that place. So, basically, you have to have the specific intent to commit a felony inside. So, basically, if you break and enter a common law, if you broke and enter into somebody's house at nighttime, but you were just hanging out, you weren't going to commit any felony in there, that couldn't be burglary because you did not have the specific intent to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy, again, is another one where you have to have specific intent. Basically, you have to have two individuals who enter into agreement to achieve a certain goal of the agreement, and they have to carry something out in furtherance of it to show that they're actually doing that.
I'll tell you, if you want to see a good example of that.
What's that?
Watch that documentary, what was it, Mad Genius?
Oh, yeah. Is that the one with the...
They strapped that bomb to that guy and sent him into the bank?
Yeah, I'm halfway through it, but I haven't watched it in about a month or two.
Oh, yeah, watch that. That's a conspiracy one right there.
But did they ever come to a conclusion about what exactly happened?
I won't say 100%, but by the time everybody finished changing their stories and people finally went to jail so they had nothing to lose, so they told about what happened and people were dying and everything else... Yeah, you finally found out there wasn't anybody left to pay the price because they were all dead by the end because it took so many years.
Oh, really?
But, I mean, yes, it was. They had all conspired. Now, the only thing that was in disagreement was the guy that got his head blown off in there.
If he was in on it?
If he was in on it or not. That's the only thing that I don't think was resolved 100%. But all the others were all involved in it.
Hmm.
That was their plan. Now, whether he was a hapless victim or whether he thought they would just get the money and they would take the bomb off or thought it was a fake bomb, I don't know. But it's a very interesting documentary to watch, and it's just hard to believe that something like that happened.
But guys, why does that have to be a real bomb? Can't we use a fake one? No, it's got to be a real one.
That's right.
Sure about that? Can we just use a fake one?
I'm not sure what they told him, but I will tell you this. They said that there was a couple of them that had to hold him still while they strapped it to him.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He didn't just stand there and like, oh, yeah, butt me up.
Oh, okay. Embezzlement is another example where basically you have some sort of fraudulent conversion of the personal property of another one. So basically if John, he's a nary-do-well, he's been doing a lot of bad stuff, So if John agrees to watch Matt's bike while he's on vacation and then sells it to someone on Craigslist without Matt's consent, he's guilty of embezzlement because he specifically intended to deprive Matt of his bicycle by doing that.
Yes, he did.
So,
and he deprived him ultimately.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. But basically, any crime where you have to have a very specific mental state in order to accomplish that crime can be viewed as a specific intent crime.
So. Here was another form of intent that I came across that you might be familiar with. Original intent.
Is that a name of a heavy metal band?
That was a movie.
Oh.
No. It's a theory of interpretation by which judges attempt to ascertain the meaning of a particular provision of a state or federal constitution by determining how the provision was understood at the time it was drafted and ratified. So it kind of gets back to almost like constitutionality.
Oh, yeah.
Intent as far as a constitution and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that here was the intent of this law, because there may sometimes be unforeseen consequences of a law that somebody tries to apply it to it, and on the face it looks like, yeah, that covers it, but that was not the intent of that law when it was written, and judges have to sometimes determine how that works.
Yeah, when you have law on your side, argue law. When you don't, argue intent.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to like look at that. And one of the ways you can argue intent and what the legislature or the lawmaking body wanted to do is, as you know, whenever bills and laws are drafted, they go to committee.
Mm-hmm.
And committee actually discusses these different laws and proposes the language and whatnot, what it's going to be. And you can actually look at committee notes from these different legislative bodies. They publish them. So there's been times where I've had to resort to looking at committee notes to try to get some sort of intent as to what they were trying to do with this law. So you can go to the committee and say, oh, well, no, we'll see here, Senator so-and-so said that this was the reason they were doing this was because of this. And so they all agreed this is the reason. So even if you read this law and it's a little vague or maybe doesn't mean that, you can see this is what they intended because this is what they were talking about during the committee meeting.
Right.
So I've definitely had to do that before, and sometimes you do have to look at committee notes to try to figure out what the heck's going on or what they mean, because sometimes when they draft things, they don't exactly draft it very clearly. They don't use their words too good.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's the same way what you talked about with contracts before.
Yeah.
In contracts, there should be intent should be clear. If intent is not clear or ambiguous, then it's up to somebody to interpret. And as you said before, it usually goes against the writer of it, because he's the one that didn't make it clear to start with.
Yeah.
If there's any kind of discrepancy. But that's where intention in that type of contract law is very important.
Absolutely. That's why you want to make sure that you have the language in there as clean and clear as possible. So sometimes if you write something, you want to take a look at it, and maybe set it down, walk away from it a little bit, have a cup of coffee, come back and look at it again, and think, can you read that any other possible way? Now, you started touching on not talking about any kind of constitutional law or intent when people are writing laws, but actually in the civil context of intent.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things called intentional torts.
Intentional torts?
Intentional torts. And
Justin baked an intentional tort, a chocolate one, last weekend.
Did he?
Yeah.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was really good. Had nuts on it. He intentionally baked it.
He intentionally put nuts on it?
Yeah.
So a tort, in legal terms, is when there's some sort of wrongful act that causes harm to someone else. So basically, an intentional tort would basically mean you are intentionally trying to harm someone else. Now, this is in the civil context, not the criminal context. But
so you're not physically trying to hurt them, but you're like financially trying to hurt them or something.
Well, no, you could physically try to hurt them too.
Oh, it's just in a contract?
No. Well, I'll explain. You just got to listen up for a second here.
Oh, well, I should listen.
There are different kinds of laws or crimes that, not crimes, but causes of action that fall in both criminal and civil. So mm-hmm. to make it a little bit more confusing. For example, battery is an intentional tort, as is assault.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you can sue someone civilly for battery or assault, or the prosecutor can charge them criminally for battery and assault as well.
So can both take place?
They both can. Just, it's kind of like, we always talk about the O.J. Simpson thing.
Yeah.
O.J. was charged criminally for murder.
And acquitted,
and then sued for wrongful death.
And found guilty.
So, kind of the same thing with like battery and assault and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, an intentional tort is simply just some sort of wrongful act that is done on purpose. It doesn't necessarily mean, civil doesn't equate contracts. I mean, it could be other things too, other acts. Like if you took your car and you intentionally rammed somebody with it and killed them, you could be, well, I mean, maybe even murder, but vehicular manslaughter or vehicle homicide. But you could also be sued civilly for wrongful death as well. So that's kind of like, there can be one act that are two different kinds of lawsuits arise from, one criminal and one civil.
I think about doing that almost every day, but I haven't done it yet.
One of the classic intentional torts is called false imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
And false imprisonment was when you confine someone without legal authority. So basically, you keep them locked up somewhere and don't allow them to leave.
Like, say, an abusive husband won't let his wife leave the house or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that could be one. I think you more commonly see this with maybe like if somebody, like Walmart, thinks somebody is shoplifting and they lock them in a room and detain mm-hmm. them till the police get there. Mm-hmm. But then they find out the person actually didn't shoplift. They've basically been falsely imprisoned at that point. So, and say maybe they were going to a job interview and then they didn't get the job because they were late for the interview. And you could kind of shoestring your damages in there. But
well, if you're Walmart, you just say, oh, my bad. Here's a $5 coupon next time you come in.
Now, there is actually something called the shopkeeper's privilege, which some places have, which allow shopkeepers to keep people who they suspect of shoplifting for a reasonable amount of time. But
well, you should be able to till the law can arrive, the real law, not the mall law.
That's right.
I'm calling not Paul Blart.
I'm calling the cops. Let them sort it out. Another classic intentional tort is defamation. We've talked about that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, where you knowingly say something false about someone, that is an intentional tort. Trespass is another one, where basically you go into someone's house and take their property without their permission. That can be a civil thing as well, as opposed to just burglary or larceny or something like that. It could be a civil trespass, or sometimes it's called a conversion. If you take somebody's property and convert it, mm-hmm. basically steal and give it to somebody else, that's called conversion. So
that's what happens with the druggies around here. They steal your stuff and go take it to the pawn shop and get pennies on the dollar, and then you're out for it.
That's right. Speaking of which, I posted something on our Facebook page today. If you're not a member of our Facebook page,
yeah,
you should definitely join it because there's lots of interesting stuff that goes on there. But the Facebook page, I posted this thing about this guy who fended off someone breaking into his house with a machete and almost chopped the guy's hand off. And it turns out it was actually a friend of his who he had recently bought a bicycle for so they could go bike riding together and all this other stuff. But he had a feeling that his friend was the one who was breaking into his house who had done it before.
Yeah, it was a neighbor.
Yeah, a neighbor. And so his friend called and he said, "No, I'm not home." And so the guy said, "Okay, well, I'll see you later." And then promptly went over his house and tried to rob him. So
and he cut his hand off with a machete.
Yeah, well, he didn't cut it totally off, but pretty much.
Well, you know, in some Islamic countries, that's what they do if they catch you stealing, they cut your hand off. So
yes,
maybe he was practicing Islamic law.
One of the informed neighbors there brought that up.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good. One of the other things that I came across on that is intention and foreseeable consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Does intending an action make a difference to either moral or legal responsibility? And here's what it went into as far as, you know, criminal law involves what is called mens rea or the mental state that is an element of the crime. In ordinary morality, we differentiate between intentional and infliction of harm as more culpable than mere negligence. So here's the example. Number one, Ben has a gun. He aims at Alice and shoots, hoping to kill her. Her death was what he was trying to accomplish.
Right.
Example two, Carlos plants a bomb under the bridge. He wants to destroy the bridge, but he also knows that when he triggers the bomb, Don is on the bridge right over the powerful bomb. Carlos regrets that Don died, and he had hoped that by some miracle Don would live. Example three, Edgar is holding Francis and Gertrude captive. When Edgar's demands aren't met, he executes Francis. Edgar regrets that he had to do this, but he believes this is the only way that he will be able to intimidate Francis and Gertrude's employer into paying a ransom for Francis. Example 4. Harry shoots in the air on New Year's Eve. The bullet goes up and comes down, killing Ingrid. Harry did not intend to kill anyone, but he did recognize that there was a small risk that his bullet might strike or injure or kill. In all four cases, we can say that one person killed another, but each case differs with respect to intentionality. Without going through it, they basically said, in the first three, everyone would agree it doesn't matter what their intention was. They knowingly killed somebody else.
Right.
example four would be the one where, well, maybe we need to think about this.
Well, I think there's other factors that go into it. Was it a populated area? Was he out in the middle of nowhere?
He knew it was possible. Did he really think that would happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the only one. And still, four people killed four other people, but that's the only one where there's any exception. Just because they had some regrets about it, well, that didn't really matter.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the one. That was one. Now, here's one that I found interesting. I stumbled across this, and I didn't know that it was a real thing. I saw this on The Good Place. You know that TV show? You haven't watched that, The Good Place?
No.
Oh, you ought to watch that. It's got,
I don't watch a lot of TV.
Kristen, what's her name, that's married to Dax Shepard. That was also Anna in Frozen.
Oh, Kristen Bell?
Kristen Bell, yeah. It's got her in it and Ted Danson.
You mean Veronica Mars.
Oh, is that who she is?
Yeah.
It's got Ted Danson in it, too. But anyway, it's a good show. But they had this exact thing in there. Have you heard of the situation of the trolley problem?
I have not.
All right. A trolley is running out of control down a track. In its path are five people who have been tied to the track by a mad philosopher. Fortunately, you can flip a switch which will lead the trolley down a different track. Unfortunately, there is a single person tied to that track. Should you flip the switch with the result that one will die instead of five? Now you have to think about intent. You have no intent. You're on this trolley. You can't control it, and it's headed to kill these five people.
Mm-hmm.
When you flip that switch, you're making the decision to kill that other person.
That's true. Are you asking me what I do?
It's a moral dilemma and a legal dilemma. I mean, if you don't want to have any intent, you just let the trolley go and kill the five people.
I flip the switch.
You flip the switch and kill one person.
Yep.
And take what you get.
Yep.
All right. Now, take it a step further. Most philosophers agree that it's morally permissible to flip that switch. The philosopher and legal theorist John McHale has done a series of experiments that confirm that most ordinary people agree. If you pull the switch, you act intentionally, and you cause the death of one person. Now consider a second problem, organ harvesting. You are a surgeon performing elective surgery on a healthy person. Five other patients are on the verge of death, but could be saved if you killed your healthy patient, harvested her organs, and passed them on to those five other people. Should you kill your patient?
No.
Why not? It's the same thing, isn't it?
No.
You save five to save one. I mean, to kill one.
It's not, because
kill one to save five.
The trolley's coming out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to kill somebody regardless. At the point you're electing to kill your own patient, you're making a choice to kill them to try to save these other people.
Almost everyone, except perhaps some hardcore utilitarians, agree that killing the patient is morally impermissible. Both cases involving causing the death of one to save five, but in the trolley problem, you do not directly intend the death. In the trolley problem, you may hope that through some miracle, the one person escapes death. In organ harvesting, on the other hand, the surgeon must intend the patient's death. The organs can only be harvested if the patient is killed. So perhaps it's that intention to kill that makes a difference in our moral intuitions.
Now, one interesting thing I saw talking about conditional or unconditional intent, differentiating unconditional intent, a person's expected result from the consequence of their actions. And you have conditional intent, which is a person's expected result only when a condition diverts the person from their unconditional intent. So it's a lot of kind of double talk, but yeah. I'll give you an example here. There's a case called Holloway v. United States, and the U.S. Supreme Court held that the word intent within the federal statute can mean either a person's unconditional intent, conditional intent, or both, depending on the context and the congressional purpose of the statute. So this guy Holloway was charged and convicted with the federal crime of carjacking with the intent to cause death or serious bodily harm. He admitted that he had carjacked the person at gunpoint, but argued he only intended to use his weapon if any of the drivers had given him a hard time. The unconditional intent was to carjack without harm to the driver. The conditional intent was to carjack and to cause harm to the driver if the driver became uncooperative. So there you have the difference. And the issue was basically whether or not with the intent to cause death or serious bodily harm applies to a defendant's unconditional intent or conditional intent. The court found that although the construction of the phrase suggests that Congress meant to provide a federal penalty for only those carjackings in which the offender actually attempted to harm or kill the driver, that a common sense reading of the carjacking statute counsels that Congress intended to criminalize a broader scope of conduct than attempts to assault or kill in the course of automobile robberies. And basically, the court upheld his conviction and held that a defendant's conditional intent may violate a federal crime depending on the context and purpose of the statute. So the fact that he really didn't want to use the gun wasn't a good argument.
Well, I agree. That was when they elevated carjacking as a specific crime, and they raised the penalty on it to try to discourage carjackings.
Yeah.
Because we had an outbreak of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can understand that. That would be an unintentional consequence that they use that wording and to say, well, they were trying to say if the guy really didn't want to, he just wanted everybody to just say, okay, I'll drive you where you want. You can have my car.
You got to be crazy to try to carjack somebody. I'll tell you that right now, especially in West Virginia.
Well, or you have to be a criminal.
Well, something, because that's how you get shot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal terms and see if he remembers what they are, what they mean.
I might.
You might. Well, I didn't know if you're going to flip the script on me again. You're going to ask me questions since you kind of picked the topic.
Well, I will ask you one, but I'll let you go first.
Is it creep?
Yep.
I have no idea.
All right. Well, it is curbing realistic, exploitative, electronic, pedophilic robots act.
I'm behind creep.
There you go. Remember that when our robot overlords take over, they're going to want to know which side of the fence you were on that.
Were you a creep pro creep bro or con creep bro?
Anti creep pro.
Well, my first term is scienter.
Scienter.
Mm-hmm.
That's that term you want to use if you want them to people to think you're smart. That has to do with stuff there that has to do with intent.
That's right. It comes from the same root as the word science, and it's from the Latin word scienter, knowingly, from sire or scare, to know, to separate one thing from another. So it has to do with intent.
I cobbled that together just from our topic and had no idea what I was saying.
Felony murder. How does that relate to intent?
Well, felony murder means that somebody got killed while you were committing a felony. And so if your intent was, like if you took guns in, then there's probably pretty good intent that somebody might die. But if you went in and robbed somebody and you didn't have any weapons or anything, then you probably didn't think that somebody would die, so you maybe had less intent.
That's true. And it used to be that it didn't matter. Felony murder was felony murder, regardless of intent. But now most states have kind of moved a bit, softened that up a little bit because of the different kinds of felonies we have, because there might be some felonies where it's just completely unforeseeable that something might happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really even probable. So probability and foreseeability are two kind of crucial things when you look at intent, I think. So, in my opinion.
That's true.
Now, speaking of intent, I said there were two different kinds. There's basic intent and there's specific intent. What are the kind of the differences of that?
Basic intent means that, I don't know, I'd be making stuff up. We've run long enough. I don't want to make up stuff and waste people's time.
So basically, if you kind of intentionally or recklessly commit an act, that could be kind of basic intent.
Like
so,
shooting the gun in the air.
Yeah. That's basic intent. You're not specifically intending to hurt anybody. You're just kind of being completely reckless with disregard. Not malice aforethought or anything like that, but, you know, just disregard.
Maybe not too smart.
Yeah, it's not too smart. And what is specific intent?
Well, that's when you were going to shoot somebody. And so, I mean, you intended to kill somebody and you went and you shot them. Then that was specific.
That's right. And you're actually intending that certain act, and it's foreseeable that's going to happen.
Right.
Now, I did talk about how, in the context between civil and criminal, how there's two different kinds of areas where intent comes into play, and one of them had to do with civil, and it was a certain kind of cause of action, and they're categorized something, and Justin baked one.
Tort.
What's the full term?
Intentional tort.
That's right, intentional tort. And do you remember what some of those intentional torts were?
Like assault and embezzlement.
Mm-hmm. And what was that? What's our favorite one?
Uttering.
Not uttering. Defamation.
Defamation.
Our old friend defamation.
Not defecation. That's totally different.
Yeah.
Don't utter about defecation.
Yep. I think we need to end this episode, though, because I'm getting pretty pooped.
All right. That's our duty.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sprung. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.